Hello and welcome to the latest edition of How Might We? And again, it's a Talking Heads with me and three guests. And today we're going to be talking about how might we focus in leadership. So I've got Oakland, I've got Jeff and Douglas as the guests this time, which is again, visited me before. So it's a sort of a rerun, sort of the sequel. Let's see if it can be better than the first one. There's some pressure on you there, guys. So who would like to go first and introduce themselves to the audience? If nobody goes, I'll go in the order in which I can see you. So, Douglas, would you mind going first?
Oh, thank you. Yes. And good evening, everybody. I think my name is Douglas Lyons. As you can hear from my accent, I'm South African, but I live in London. And I am a senior executive of 25 years experience behind me in financial services, educated in both South Africa as well as the United States. And I'm a co-founder of a great business in London with Jeff, who's on the discussion with us, called IBEM Group Limited. And Scott, as always, really great to be here with you and the rest of the team.
You're welcome, and thank you for attending again. So in the order which I can see you, Jeff, would you like to go next?
Yes, absolutely. Welcome and great to be with everyone here today. It's an honor and a privilege to be speaking about this subject. My name is Jeff Hudson-Still. I'm a 30-year international executive, digital non-executive director to three companies, and also chairman of the Remco subcommittees on two of those companies. I'm also a seasoned C-suite executive, and I work alongside Douglas as an executive and co-founder of IBM Group, and an author also of seven books. So I'm now focusing a lot more on sort of articles for the mainstream press. But I can honestly say that, you know, my last book, The Trust Paradigm, I think has got a lot of allegiances to some of the things we're going to be talking about today. But thank you, Scott.
Yeah, you're welcome. And last and definitely not least, all the way over the pond, Oakland.
Hey, Scott, thanks for having me on the show again. Yeah, I've got about 40 years of plus of leadership, and a lot of that was in the American Army, the United States Army. I was a combat arms officer for 23 years, but I've also done some nonprofit as a leader and government service now as a leader. And like Jeff, I'm an author. I don't have seven books yet. I only have one, but will soon be working on my second book. So glad to be here.
Okay. And Doug, you're a co-author, are you not?
I am indeed, yes. But I'm very proud to say that we led a team of 65 professionals around the world and executives, and we launched an amazing book on digital innovation. And we're proud to say we have the largest set of open source models on innovation in the world that folks can get for free, you know, and it's really been an amazing journey. So I'm like Oak, I'm still on number one. I think I'll have to think about number two, but we got a long way to catch Jeff up.
Yeah. I'm on zero, so I've got a long way to catch anybody up. So there we go. And it's really nice that in my bookcase, I have a signed copy of Doug's and Jeff's books. So thank you very much, guys.
And when I come to London, you'll get one of mine.
There was no pressure in that, but I'll take it. that's influencing skills 101. There we go.
That's it.
Yeah, done. Okay. So we're talking focus in leadership. And obviously, we had a conversation before we came online to talk about this. And it's quite interesting that we've had a conversation before about the importance of trust and everything else. And I think, Jeff, you put some stuff together, which is going to be part of the description for this. And we are now, what you say, living in this sort of area where there is just such a huge lack of trust, and how important that is going to be for leadership and organizations moving forward. And I think then is the ability for leaders to focus in the right places to deliver those types of things. I think that's probably the area we're going to be talking about. That's the difference of focus. And there's a great quote I like, is where the focus goes, the energy goes, or the energy follows.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And also I think, you know, I know that Oak and I and Doug and yourself, Scott, have talked about this in great depth and detail, but it is an absolute privilege and it is an honor to lead. We know that. But where I'd like to take this, if it's okay with you, Scott, a little bit, because I think it's a good opener, is that generally leadership has changed. And you know, we've got to accept that C-suite, particularly CEOs today, they lack the personal engagement across the organization. That's one. I think they, to a degree, they lack a lot of vision. They lack a lot of empathy mapping and humility too. But the question is, what are they prepared to do about that for change? Because, you know, we all talked about in previous discussions about, you know, the CEO doesn't want to change a thing because he's got a bonus coming up or an exit in 18 months. So therefore, he doesn't really want to, you know, provide turbulence to the organization around further change because, you know, he knows that he or she know that if they manage things out, you know, carefully with, you know, a 5% increase or 10% increase on performance at this level of ratio and this level of assumed profitability, then they'll get their bonuses. Now, that's I believe that mindset needs to change. We also know that command and control cannot work in today's business model environment. It's not a probability. And we also know that for some people, some organizations, Douglas and I actually were at a very large meeting with one of the big four in another part of the UK yesterday, and they're sort of they're saying, well, let's look at metrics, the trust metrics, and that's all very good and interesting, but really what I'm trying to say here is things have changed, so therefore the way that businesses look at their organization and their people has also got to change. And I don't see enough examples at this moment in time where you've got this new stewardship of leaders coming in that are really going to make an adaptable difference into this disruptive environment that we're working on. We're seeing short-termism. We're seeing that they're operating around a horizon one, maybe a horizon 1.5, but they're certainly not getting into transformation and then really accelerating performance and growth in a horizon three environment. So what have businesses or CEOs got to do now? Or what is their reluctancy for change? How can they, you know, change these organizations, as I said, to engage people, to engage a better vision, to look at empathy, humility, psychological safety, and an environment where all employees can prosper under, you know, a united vision where they're looking at the overall goal and not on what's going to come next in the next 18 months with alleged bonuses, etc. So I don't know, maybe that's a starting point.
That's a really good point about that short-termism, long-termism, that business ambiguity of how can we help make the business survive today but also prosper for tomorrow. Is it business ambidextrity? Being ambidextrous in your business and your thinking, which I think is an important aspect. But also, how much does the system and the way we've constructed businesses and bonuses, and the example could be, so we've got a couple of the big water companies in the UK recently, the senior manager said, we're not taking the bonuses because we can't. But if they actually looked at how their performance has been measured, they would be entitled to bonuses. But if you actually think about what they're actually delivering, it's not in line with the stakeholders, i.e. some of the clients and the customers, it's not helping them. So as it goes back to you saying metrics, what are we measuring success and how we measure success and how does that then?
Yeah, and to caveat that, I went on to Management Today, their website yesterday, just briefly, early in the morning, and they asked me a survey. And the survey was, you know, what did I value? What should a CEO be paid for in terms of its bonus structure? You know, and I gave you a series of items. And have I ever given up a bonus, you know, in line with the company, you know, trajectory at that point? And it was very interesting. I've never seen that survey before, but it was clear that this topic that we're talking about right now is definitely a big topic in the wider landscape of business today.
And it looked like you were about to say something.
Yeah, well, so I think that, I mean, Jeff's absolutely right. I mean, leadership has got to change, but I think part of the two things I think are the problem. Number one, a lot of the CEOs today have been brought up under that system and they're so afraid of changing it because they don't know what comes next. And so they're risk averse and they don't want to take risk that will eventually be beneficial to them. But number two, I think, is that we're not doing a good job of training leaders today. And it goes back to, you know, the quote I use in my book that I wish I could take credit for, but I can't. Somebody who worked for me, Master Sergeant David Powell, And I say he worked for me. He was a better leader than I was, probably. But great leadership handed down from generation to generation is what develops great nations. And we're not developing great leaders right now. So how are they going to pass on? What are they going to pass on to the next generation? Yeah. The same thing they know, not what's the best thing for going forward.
Yeah. And I think just to add on to that, I think, you know, when we look at the core skills and attributes of executives and executive teams going forward, we look at the bedrock being three key pillars: wisdom, because wisdom allows, there's a difference between intelligence and wisdom. Wisdom is a much more well thought out. It's much slower. It is much more measured. It's much more longer term and considering a lot more of the contextual landscape versus intelligence. The second one is experience in being in situations where you've had to get yourself out of a dark corner, or you've had to build a new business and a Horizon 3 business. And then lastly, I think it's, as Jeff, you know, and Scott, you mentioned in the beginning, is how do we bring trust to the forefront in everything that we do, not only within organizations as leaders, but equally within the ecosystem that we play in, with regulators, with stakeholders, with customers. And I think with, you know, of course, with technology and the transparency around instantaneous feedback, you know, these are the things that, you know, when we look at the core skills and attributes of leaders and leadership teams, is this high level of adaptability that's required. Clearly they are, and I can only imagine, because I can't even keep up with the amount of technological pace that's happening out there. So there's an immense amount of information overload that executives have to deal with. And they have to navigate very carefully through this information download in a very measured way around, you know, how do we make sure this business survives? How do we make sure that we don't get disrupted?
Douglas, we talked about trust as a business, or is the new business currency, right? Yeah. And I think that's clear. But I don't think many leaders really understand a lot of what, at a granular level, some of the subjects that Scott, Oak, you and Mia are actually touching on right now. Because for me, if I was a chief exec today in today's disruptive world, right, I'd be looking at this as a competitive advantage.
Correct.
But if you can actually start fixing the mistrust, now taking an organization from mistrust to high trust is a paradigm. It's a lot of work. But if you can achieve that objective, everything that you have just touched on, everything that Oak has touched on, everything that Scott has touched on, and I've touched on, clearly gives you that differentiator, which it differentiates you away from the rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now we're seeing ESG and, yeah, the greater level, when we're seeing the carbon issues, and we're seeing how boards of directors are having to address some of these things. And believe you me, for many board directors, they're having to upskill, uptrain, in, you know, seek greater knowledge and wisdom, you know, and all of the things that make trust work.
Mm.
Now, you know, we can't blame the pandemic anymore. We're systematically back to those business models. Design thinking is very much based about thinking outside of the box, how we can solve business challenges, business objectives, okay, in a way that's never been thought about before, because you're unpacking the business model, rebuilding the business model, and then engaging and executing, which of course we know isn't just a people issue, it's a technology issue. And I've always said, if strategy and culture are in alignment, and you have a CEO, him or her, to be able to drive that initiative throughout the organization, then, and right now, what I'm seeing from the CEO's point of view, CEOs has to be more about personal engagement, philosophy, that vision, the humility, the empathy, the compassion that we sort of described on. But words are very easy, as we all know. The reality is, and we still know this from the statistics, whether it's PwC, Deloitte, McKinsey, Bain, whoever is putting out the report, there's a very slow uptake for change. And it's not the speed in way in which we're operating at is outperforming the mindset change. And unless we can fix the mindset change, okay, we're never going to kickstart the economy. And some of the people that I've actually been talking to of late talk about trust as the catalyst for economic growth. If you can put all of these cogs together and fundamentally make them work.
You know, Jeff, it reminds me of a conversation I had many years ago when I did my executive program in the US, and a wonderful coach and mentor gave me two pearls of wisdom. And I think these pearls of wisdom are actually timeless. The one is, we must not underestimate the ability to unlearn and relearn at the fastest rate possible. And I think that when I look at, you know, the roles of not just executives, but throughout businesses, throughout, whether it be not-for-profits, is we all have to unlearn and relearn and consciously unlearn and leave things behind. The second, you know, profound, you know, comment that was made to me at the time was, don't underestimate the ability to ask a deeply refined question and what you can gain from that. And those two, you know, as I said, I think they're absolutely timeless. Because the world that we live in now is clearly got more crazy. I was reminiscing the other day with my family around saying, well, geez, remember the days when we didn't have cell phones? Remember how life was when we didn't have cell phones? And so we don't realize these impacts around us in our personal lives and our professional lives. And so there's no doubt we have become so busy and we get caught up in that busyness and we forget two things. We forget the humanness of engagement and listening carefully, and which we know is a massive component of trust. But we also, and I call it, we miss the wood for the trees, because we're just so busy in the quagmire of the detail that we actually miss what's really counts out there. And I think lastly, Oka, something you said is the fear of change. You know, Jeff, you and I saw a great example this week of an amazing tech company who will disrupt massive tech companies in what they're doing, and no one even knows. They won't even know before it even hits them. So, you know, you've got to realize that if you don't disrupt yourself, somebody's going to do it. It's not if, it's when someone's going to do it. So
that's right.
Yeah,
I mean, Oak, you know, we share well, we're both big fans of Mr. Vince Lombardi. You know, no big surprise I'm wearing a Green Bay Packers shirt, although I should be supporting the Jets right now. But you know, he said, and I quote, this is one of the quotes I love, and I have it pinned on my wall in my office, actually. And it's going, it says, by Vince Lombardi, it says, winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-time thing. You don't win once in a while. You don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit, but unfortunately, so is losing.
Absolutely, it is. Yeah, you know, and I think the trust piece is so, it's huge. And it's not just one way. And it's you know, it's what allows the leader-led relationship to actually work. Without it, that doesn't work. But I think it's also trust up, like you're saying, to the boards. And it's also, you got to build that trust among the people inside your organization. They have to trust that the person next to them is doing the right thing and doing their part. Because if that, any part of that trust is broken, then the system breaks down.
And actually, one of the things you've just touched on is alludes actually back to command and control slightly, because if you're doing that, you're going to lose your people. Micromanagement is a disease within an organization.
It is. It's evil.
It's evil, right? And we all know the consequences of that. Equally, we know that if you are pushing all your people to maximum and beyond, you might get year one bonus and year one performance, but you'll lose your people because you've got burnout issues, you've got frustration issues, and these things just escalate. You know, the quiet quitting, the psychological safety, the lack of culture, the lack of collaboration, the lack of ability to understand what the vision is, the value system within the organization. You know, all of these things stem down to one fundamental thing. You've got to have leadership.
Yeah, I would agree. I think one of the things that many leaders don't understand is the power of empowering their people to do things, give them the authority to make things happen and let them make decisions at their level. Now, you can't wash your hands of it, obviously, but you got to let them do it. And that's a win-win for everybody. That's a win for the people that you're empowering because they're learning to be a leader. They're learning all those things that they want to do. And then you get to win because now you can focus on, as we've said, the vision, the culture, those things that a leader really needs to do, the senior leader.
And I think you've hit a raw nerve here, because one of the things I firmly believe right now is there's a lack of focus in leadership. And actually, that's the name of this podcast. This I think in some extent that leadership's ability to focus has somewhat been convoluted as a direct result of technology, for sure. Profound amount of objectives. In some respects, Douglas, we've also talked about, is the way forward to actually have two CEOs within an organization, not one, because there is an overwhelmed amount. But if these leaders do not focus on the immediate priorities of the business, and by the way, human-centered design and people have now become a major priority within the organization. Not technology, people. Mm-hmm. Irrespective of the WEF report, which clearly showed that there's going to be a creation of 64, 67 million jobs to 2030, but there's going to be a reduction of 14 million jobs. People are still a big part of, you know, what makes a business an organization and development work. Right?
And I think, Jeff, when you talk about, you know, like you talked about trust and as leaders and how we build that trust, part of that is the transparency and the authenticity around one's long-term purpose and long-term goals and aspirations and the journey that's getting us there. Because at the end of the day, I think what we've also got to realize is that it's not just at leadership level, it's at every single level in any organization, is that we all have to realize we've got to retool ourselves. You know, we've got to say that, yes, there's new technology and things are going to change. And so it's that authenticity and transparency that when you empower your staff, you empower them with context, with education, and the ability to unlearn and relearn and retool themselves to remain relevant in the future. And I think that becomes very, very powerful. And I'm a firm believer in, and I've experienced it in my executive career, is the power of context, education, aligned to long-term vision and purpose. You unlock, you know, the fire in people's hearts and not under their butts. And that's the big difference.
Yeah, it's true. But actually, irrespective, you know, boards never really pay that much attention to the sort of, you know, behavioral words that come, you know, cognitive biases, because it's all about, you know, performance. Generally,
short-term.
So, but when trust is clearly stated, you know, that, you know, a trustworthy company outperforms a non-trust company by 2.5 times, that 88% of customers prefer to buy from a trusted brand versus a non-trusted brand. I think economically and from a financial performance perspective, those numbers speak for themselves. And by the way, doesn't matter who you look at for those statistics, whether it's the Edelman, you know, trust report, whether it is Deloitte or whether it is KPMG or PwC, it's a consistent number that's actually being researched globally and internationally. So there is a play to say board's attention to this does need to increase. I still have this underpinning statement that believe that if you fix the trust issue within the organization economically, you are going to accelerate. It's speed, accuracy, but with trust that will make organizations grow.
Right. I've got a question then, because we've talked about trust a lot, and I think this is something that leaders need to ask themselves and organizations. What do you want to be trusted with? And I think that can help you focus in the right areas. Because if we say you want to be trusted, because you might trust somebody with your car keys, but you don't trust them with finishing a project on time. So trust isn't I do or don't trust somebody.
I wouldn't trust anybody with my car keys, trust me.
No.
So I don't get to drive your car when I'm there?
No.
Yeah, of course you can, Oak. You know,
he will still have the keys.
My house is my home is your home.
But so
I just gotta remember to drive on the wrong side of the street.
And the right side, the rest of the world is wrong. We're fine. It's all about it. That's when I drive abroad. The first 2 or 3 minutes are, oh, I'm on the right. Where am I again? Okay, everyone's coming to me. I need to change lanes.
To come back to that point that you raised, is I think trust is a two-way street.
Yes.
And, you know, when we talk about leadership and we talk about micromanagement, clearly that's not ideal. Mm. You know, what you want is you want, we call it delegation with control and oversight. But it can be lost in a moment as well, you know, in terms of an employee-employer relationship. It can be lost in a moment with a customer. And so, you know, the key is, hey, how do you always, you know, how do you recover from that, learn from that, whether it's a customer or a staff member, et cetera, et cetera. But also, you know, at executive level, what I've seen when it's worked really well is when you have, it's led by the CEO himself or herself, and it is measured and it is reported back to every single person in the organization. I remember many years ago, I was in a turnaround situation, and we had a CEO that came in, which we didn't expect it would come in. In hindsight, he did a fantastic job because he had 10 metrics, 10 things on a scorecard. And he said, guys, my pass mark is 80%. That's what I've got to get as a CEO. And every single person rated him. Every customer's rated him and his team. Yeah. And I think we did that for 10 years, that journey of that scorecard. And it really made a material shift in terms of performance. Jeff, coming to your point, of building a far more sustainable culture. There were some challenges along the way. There always has, always will be. But without that, you know, simple, you know, mechanism to of course, supported by a number of initiatives, but you've got to take tangible action.
I agree with what you're saying. And I think I'd like to expand on that just a little bit. I think it's important. I mean, when I was the CEO of Metro Media Technologies, we had, you know, Europe was kind of low in its performance area. And after I completed the SWOT analysis of Europe, Middle East and Africa, understood what was wrong and then delivered back to all the countries on the sort of the operational structure and development that was required to fix a lot of those problems, I then re-KPI'd it. But what was the glue between the 12 offices that I had, not only from a stakeholder perspective, was the peer-to-peer relationship, but also the EMEA sort of customer base. It was important to refresh the culture, create that vision, mission, and set values, and underpin that, which was the driving force. Now, I took that business from 7 million to 220 million in just over 2.5 years. Now, my Portuguese director said, Jeff, you haven't created a culture or brand, you have created a religion. Because the emotional buy-in that I had to the brand internally was that people didn't just turn up at 9 o'clock. They were there at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. They weren't leaving their desks. They were there to complete what needed to be completed. Yeah. They were a big part of the transformation, and they were a big part of the growth. Yes, there was learning, new learnings. Yes, there was upskilling. Yes, we were a product bias going to a solution bias. And there was an awful lot of parallels, but we were able with that team to take that business to a pivot in very, very difficult circumstances. So the culture piece that we talk about, and by the way, we did have trust.
Yeah.
We trusted one another to do the same. It was that team leadership, if I can call it team leadership, and my leadership team, my ELT, were phenomenal.
But, you know, one of the things that I see, and to go back to kind of what you're both talking about, but Douglas brought up, was the training. And here's the problem that I see right now is that when money gets tight or things start to go wrong, then one of the first things that goes are the things that you can't put a direct dollar amount. How much is that bringing in? And training is one of those things But I mean, that's the worst thing you can do is cut the training. First of all, people will leave because if you're not giving them some path to improve and move up in the company, they're going to go find somebody who does. And second of all, that's what keeps you on the front line of change and the front line of improving the organization is the training that you provide to them. And I see a lot of companies here in the United States, probably the world, but certainly here in the United States.
I think
States,
it goes beyond
that's
that.
That's the first thing they close.
I think it goes beyond the learning and development piece to the point where businesses need to create communities, internal communities.
Absolutely. You know, go back to Vince Lombardi. A team is a group of people who play together. A team is a group of people who trust each other. And unless you build that team, then you're already behind the power curve.
And I think that topic of teamwork and an ecosystem is really powerful. And maybe a slightly different angle on this, Scott, is when we look at this desperate need for innovation in business, most companies really underestimate their core assets and capabilities that they can use to leverage to create new businesses. And whether it be their brand, their financial strength, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the most valuable assets of any business is their existing customer base. And when you start to really, you know, take a different view in terms of integrating yourself into the world of your customers and what they experience and how you make a difference in the communities that you operate in, you become far more trusted, far beyond a transactional relationship. And I was, many years ago, I was blessed to be an executive sponsor on a program that spans 6 million customers and 22,000 staff. And we had to break down silos of internal mistrust. It took us time when we had to put a lot of structured processes together. But what we did was we actually built a model where we really broke the geographical, you know, footprint down into locations. And each team was tasked to work within those communities and those customers in those communities to really understand their world a lot better. And in that journey of 3 years, we took the revenue from 14 billion to 18 billion, you know, just by building trust with our customers and the communities they operate.
And I like that, Doug. I think that it doesn't just create the trust that you talked about, but, you know, we haven't really talked about psychological safety. But where you have trust in those environments, you address the psychological safety. There's a lot of people who have been under toxic or narcissist leaders and behavior patterns, which is defamatory to the business, but defamatory to the individual. It's causing increased levels of mental health. It's causing, you know, burnout. And actually, for a lot of people, they don't want to go to the office.
Yeah, it causes them to shut down.
They don't even want to collaborate on Teams calls, right? They'll work behind the email. Well, you have no idea the billions and trillions of dollars that costs global business on a daily, monthly, weekly basis as a direct result of not addressing the fundamental issue in the first place. That is, if you can address the trust, there are many things that are going to come out of trust, right? Like psychological safety, right? And then you're right on the training development. There's no question. But also, you should be sharing more information. You shouldn't have to worry or look over your back. You know, you should be able to, you should be, people should be wanting to be able to share data and information, new intelligences, or, you know, wanting to collaborate more with peers and leadership, right? Than be afraid.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff, it reminds me of a survey, which, you know, I think it was 84% of executives around the world. Through McKinsey said that they believe they don't have the right combination of executive team to manage across the three horizons of growth.
Yeah.
You know, I would arguably say, if you had to put another lens on that and say, if you had to ask boards, you know, it would be a similar percentage. Say, you know, do you comfortably believe you have the right leadership team with the right emotional intelligence and decency intelligence? You know, I would think it's a similar percentage. And I think when we start to see this trend that unravels, it all comes back to the importance of people whether that be regulators, whether that be staff, whether that be customers, it is still people that make those decisions. Yes.
And, you know, in some environments, Doug and Oak and Scott, you're going to see, oh, it's too late for us to try and fix trust. It's not, because trust starts with a new day and a new era, tiny micro actions, right?
That's right.
Tiny, and you can build credibility. That's the strength of your character. Okay, that is the strength of character. And to me, we're all unique in terms of our character because we all are different, right? But we can start by making small differences, and those small differences create a much bigger, wider landscape. And watch the differences. I love watching the perspective and mindset of people that have started something that I'm describing, because within 30 days, you want to, it's contagious how it breeds positivity within an environment. You know, it's great to be a leader, to stand back and just watch that grow within your department, right? So, but there's a lot of reluctancy as well. You know, there's a lot of reluctancy, and I go back to what you said earlier, Doug: authenticity, better transparency, trustworthiness, openness. You know, these are the things that breed positivity, because, you know, people are having freedom of speech, being able to speak, and then, and some respects, you could actually align this back to values.
It actually, Jeff, if you think about it, and Scott and Oak, what Jeff and I've been working on for some time is a leadership canvas of the core skills and attributes of, I would arguably say, a leadership team, because I think if there was any one leader that had all those core skills and attributes, they'd be walking on water. But it is an amazing, you know, analysis, because it really deep dives. I think literally every single topic, Jeff, that we've covered in this conversation is on that one page canvas. And
yeah, it's true.
And it's, you know, for us, it's about saying, this is what we fundamentally believe are the core skills and attributes of teams, because at the end of the day, you know, not everybody can't be everything, but if you build your team that has a complementary skills that then add up to that, you create something special.
Yeah, and actually, while we're on this, having this subject, Oak, you know, loved your book, your first book. I'm more interested in your second book, which I know is coming up. But is there a correlation between what Doug and I and Scott have said, and maybe some of the things that come from the military?
Sure. Yeah, one of the things that you got to understand, and it comes with some humility, leaders who have humility, that you got to understand you don't have all the answers as a leader. And if you think you do, you need to go do something else. I don't care how long you've been a leader period, but even a leader in your organization, you don't have all the answers. And a good leader will use a team, and they take the good pieces out of good ideas, good parts out of other people. They're not afraid to do that. And that's what builds the strength of the team, is using everybody in that organization, using their strengths to counter your weaknesses. And I see good units in the military, and I think good companies in the civilian world, leaders understand that, and they're using people that, you know, when I took over the food bank, I knew nothing about a food bank. I was a combat arms officer. I fought and won our nation wars. Now I'm handing out food to people, completely 180 degrees difference. I knew nothing about a food bank, but I knew the people who did. I quickly figured out who knew this part and who knew that part and who to go talk to if I didn't know something. And I used them. I think that's huge as a leader.
Absolutely.
I think one of the key things in that is capabilities. Be aware of the capabilities required and be aware of your personal capabilities, and then say, how can I fill these gaps?
But here's the problem, Scott. If you got a leader who doesn't know his people or her people, then they can't figure out what their capabilities are. You know, and I know I've talked to Jeff about this before, is, you know, as I go around and talk to organizations and companies, and I figure out that trust is an issue, and I tell them, look, building trust takes time and effort and all those things. But here's a good way to get started. Every day, go out and find one person in your organization and find out something new about them. Not about work, about their personal life, their spouse's name, their kids named, what sports do their kids play, and actually learn something new about that person and find one person every day and do that, and you'll start seeing trust go through the roof.
I think that comes down to what Jeff said is about, quite often we say, and there's a great quote by Stephen Covey, is you can, there's no shortcuts to trust, but you can accelerate it.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't make a shortcut. And I think what you're saying, Jeff, is, and Oki, that's the same thing. It's two words for me is one, there can be very, very small actions that make a huge difference. But the second one is the consistency of delivery. It's, you don't just do it once and think it's happened. It's did a little bit today, a little bit tomorrow, and I've gone out every day and spoken to somebody, found out something, or done something. Like I'm making a conscious effort to be, I think it's a great quote, is be curious with care with the people I work with. How can I be curious but demonstrate care at the same time? So if I do that every day with the people I work for, you then build a reputation. Mm. Once you build your, and that goes back to what do you want to be trusted with or as?
Yeah.
I think that can give you a more strategic approach, especially as an organization, is that if we want to be trusted as this, how can we build that level of trust within that aspect, capabilities or thing within our business and the people we work for and with, so they recognize that as us. It goes back to a trusted brand, but trusted as what? Because if I'm going to sell or buy something from or to you, I need to have that level of trust to do that equally quickly and be attracted to you. So there's got to be a aspect of trust that you can then sit on and say, that's the key aspect of trust we really need to nail. Not just trust as a big thing, which needs to be internally, but for that. So like Apple, they opened up Apple Savings. $1 billion deposited within 4 days. On the reverse side, people lost trust in Swiss Bank, $100 billion withdrawn. Mm. The impact of a perceived trust in a business and a perceived distrust, $104 billion.
Well, look, what about the Russian bank, the Trust Bank? They got Bruce Willis to do all of the advertising and they had billions of dollars on deposit. And then it went down completely with everybody's deposit. Mm.
And Scott, look at that Swiss bank that went down, amount of scandal around the dual CEOs spying on each other and undermining each other. So again, it starts at the top in terms of where the rot is. And, I think the board needs to be held accountable because they should have removed those delinquent CEOs years ago.
The board needs to be more accountable, 100%.
Absolutely.
And it's what you're saying is about that level of distrust, mistrust, whatever, or lack of trust in the business becomes toxic and it becomes like a cancer.
Yes, contagious.
Yeah, just
spread. And equally, if a CEO, it's very clear that if an ELT team know that the CEO doesn't have the voice and support of the board, they won't trust the CEO. Mm. So there's a dysfunction straight away. How many times have we seen that, in our careers? As I said, the tone at the top needs to be set, and accountability is definitely a big part of that. But, values, I think we've got to concentrate more on values. We've got to allow people the freedom, to make decisions in the ranks. I think we've got to have a better openness and transparency, a better vision and philosophy around leadership and to the personnel. There needs to be a better people engagement. There does need to be things like training, development, and trust can be trained in. It can be trained in. The development is important. When you start with a company, you should be an onboarding process that takes you through the brand, the values, the company philosophy. It's a process. It's an absolute end-to-end process here. Absolutely. And I think that for many, they're going to have to start again.
Well, here's the, Jeff, that's a great point, that it's a process. Just like safety, if you're thinking about safety or you're thinking about leadership after the fact, you've already failed. Yeah. It has to be built into everything that you're going to do. That's safety. That's leadership. That's anything you want to do well has to be part of the complete system. Yeah.
As we said in the prison service, safety, security is everybody's job.
Yeah, 100%.
It's not down to, we had a security department. I wonder if people have resolved that we're going to build a trust department. It's their job to build trust, like we have with HSC. We've got a health and safety environment. We have security departments to build. No, it's an individual thing. But as you say, definitely definitely from the top. And trust, to gain trust in your communities, requires it to be internal first.
Correct.
So I think concentrate on getting the trust, as you were all saying about the teams working at that level of high trust. It becomes so much easier, because if you can see what people working for trust, you get all the advantages. But then the trust is natural, it's authentic, and people will then, it'd be evident that you can trust these people, this organization.
Right. And it's something you can't fake. I mean, people will figure that out right away. If you're trying, it's got to be authentic. It's got to be transparent, and you got to really care. I mean, there's a concept, really care about the people who work for you. Maybe, I don't know.
What about empathy mapping? If you start talking about caring, okay. Yeah. What about the empathy mapping? I mean, and compassion within the organization. Look, when we had the pandemic, we don't really talk about that, but you know, a box of bananas on a Friday afternoon being delivered at home, it doesn't tick the box for empathy and compassion, right? Mm. It really doesn't. So, you know, with communication, and you did talk about it earlier, Doug, because you said emotional intelligence, right? And you talked a little bit about decency, Duke's formula on decency intelligence. But, you know, we also have spiritual intelligence, right? Mm. And the values that comes from that to think about. We have wisdom intelligence, right? And actually, all of the intelligences that we talk about are held within an umbrella called trust intelligence. Leaders need to step up, and they need to start adopting trust intelligence. But you know, you can't just say I'm a trust intelligence CEO, an expert, without really understanding EI, you know, IQ, you know, DI, SI, WI. Is it, they need to encapsulate all of the aforementioned in order to be effective around trust.
And so sometimes, Jeff, it's about the ability to slow down, to speed up, because these executives need to get off the operational treadmills momentarily and see the world for what it is, and see the greater perspective of contextual, what I call contextual leadership, in terms of those various intelligences that you talk about.
Yeah, I agree.
And say, what does this all mean? And then go back into the world that they're in and really make quality, long-term, wise decisions, and not thousands of decisions, but smart decisions in manageable, you know, size, and that doesn't overburden the organization. And, you know, one of the things we speak about in that leadership canvas that we developed, Jeff, was the operating rhythm of the business.
Yeah.
Is your ability as the CEO to set the operating rhythm. And that's the congruence of operational, strategic, cultural, you know, paces that run in the business. And I think that's, you know, that's a massive topic in terms of, you know, for a CEO to really look at and say, to have the deep wisdom, experience, and trust to set an operating rhythm that they know is sustainable.
I think there's a word there that comes back to what you were saying about, but just don't focus, but give yourself space. Enable yourself to do that, because we run very, very fast, and it is sometimes, you say, you need to get off, you need to give yourself
space. And there's different sets of behaviors. So as an example, statistically, Gen Zs generally have about 5 or 6 screens open at any one given time. As an example, they'll go onto a website, they have a 3-second retention span, where an older individual like myself will generally look at a website for 2 minutes, 23 seconds, and then on average only have 1 screen open at a time. So look, we are integrating a lot of these different behaviors. And as a direct result of some of the Gen Z behaviors wanting, you know, to speed things up, etc., you're getting, you know, traditional CEOs that don't have focus. If anything, their focus is stolen and taken away. And this is now costing organizational development and growth as a direct result of not working on the right priorities. But right now, boards and ELTs, and particularly CEOs, don't have a choice. They have to be engaged better with people. Right. And some of the things I think we have touched on today are incredibly important to that going forward for sure. And it's very interesting. One of the strategic directors at Google left recently, and he contributed to a book that I read. And it was very interesting. He said, right, he had, with all his engineering and strategic staff in front of him, Who wants to live in the world you're designing? Not one hand went up.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm not saying that, you know, that every SME or enterprise business is trying to, you know, reflect Google. But what I do say is that using the right tools, taking those breaks that you talked about and looking at things from a different lens, I'm not saying everybody needs to go into nature, but what I'm saying is there is a certain amount of introspection and reflection that, you know, leaders need to make. They don't need to make impulsive decisions. They can make better decisions from the right time allocated to do so. There's nothing that can't wait. You know, it's like responding to an email. You know, an email comes in at 10 o'clock at night. You don't have to respond to that email unless it's critical, right? And I think we've gone to this speed of accelerated speed, as opposed to we can still operate in a speed treadmill environment, but we can focus and make better decisions, which affects, by the way, as a leader, you're affecting all of your employees and staff, everybody that's in working with you in the environment. And people want to be aligned to a set of values. They want to be aligned to a vision. They want to be knowing that they're a part of greatness, that they're a part of a world great team that's going to, you know, make a difference in the world, because that brings in the ESG, that brings in, you know, the carbon, that brings in a lot of the other issues that combined it. And you can't silo ESG from the organization. You can't silo trust into 2 out of 5 of your divisions. You know, it has to be integrated as one. And actually, people and trust need to be at the center.
Yeah. I think you hit on something really huge there, Jeff, the reflection piece of it.
Yeah.
Leaders need to reflect and on not only on the organization, but on themselves. What decisions did I make today? How could I have done them better? And I don't care if you made a great decision. There may be a better way to do it. And you got to be honest with yourself, and you got to reflect on what it is that you did and are doing, so that you can get, you and your organization and the people in it can get better.
I think we undervalue the power of reflection.
We do.
I come from a learning background, and we could have a whole conversation, Oak, about learning being cancelled. In some ways, actually, that's a benefit to a business, because what they actually deliver in learning is crap. It doesn't deliver any impact, but that's a whole new conversation. But I think the key thing about is, and it comes back to what, before we came online and Douglas and I were talking about the word wisdom, and I know, Jeff, you've talked about wisdom quite a lot, and Oak, you're alluding to it here, is, and I might get this quote wrong, so please bear with me, but it's experience is the teaching, doing something different is the lesson, and the only way to achieve that is reflection. Turning an experience into something that we learn from and can move on from. We need to be able to learn from it. We all have experiences, and I think wisdom is the ability to look back on those experiences and then say, okay, what happened? What did I learn? How can
I agree with you? And I've said in my first book, I said, I quoted, it's Mr. Jeff quote, actually. It says, we are all shaped by our own individual experiences. Absolutely. I don't believe that we have failure in life, but we do have those lessons. And it's how we learn from those lessons that creates our character, unique characters moving forward. Because we'll never, ever repeat the same mistake identically the same twice. It might be similar, but it won't be the same. So I think that what you're describing is very true. And adversity has a funny way of, you know, taking you through a series of lessons, which at the end of it creates that wisdom and that authority to be able to make better decisions. You know, so I think it's incredibly important what you've just said.
Yeah. And you get it from any age. Go on, sorry, Douglas.
No, sorry, Scott. I was thinking of an African proverb that taught Jeff. Well, there we go. I've got Jeff is getting there. But Ubuntu is an African proverb, and it's really something so powerful, because it's really around the importance of humanity, the importance of each other in our lives, of each other, each person around us. And, you know, and so I've got a simple view on life that says, surely when you make others the best versions of themselves, you become the best version of yourself. And I think that goes to what Oka said about the ability to reflect. Just a small part of our brain, a muscle that we never use, most of us never use every single day, is just to reflect on the day that says, you know, when I was walking in the corridor and I was on my phone and somebody greeted me, I didn't even look up. You know, the ability to use that part of your brain muscle to actually realize I should have stopped. I should have just had a 30-second conversation with the person, asked them about, you know, something that you knew about them, you know, and that's the things in life, which just, you know, it's that ability to pause and reflect, you know, and use a conscious part of the muscle in our brain that we actually don't use is immensely powerful as a leader, whether it's a leader in an organization, a leader in your community. Doesn't matter. It's enormously powerful.
A leader in yourself.
Yeah. And in your family.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well. It goes back to something we've said. I was doing some training the other week, and a tool I love to use when we talk about that is where we talk about understanding ourselves a little bit and emotional intelligence is the mood meter.
I love that. The mood barometer. I absolutely love that. That's fantastic, Scott.
Because that's a great way of assessing in decision-making and giving yourself the space. Yeah. For me to make this decision, where should I be emotionally to be effective?
Yeah.
Should it do? So how unpleasant am I feeling? How much energy do I have? Which is two really simple questions to ask, which helps you map where you should be and then understanding where should I be. So if I'm in, so Doug, if I'm one of your creative activities at D school, when you're talking about design thinking, I would hopefully be high energy, high pleasantness.
Yeah.
But then when you're then doing assessing the ideas, I'd want to be high pleasant, low energy because I want to reflect. So I think being aware of that as a really great tool of at least having some sort of awareness of where I am and am I emotionally at this moment in a right place to make an effective decision in this context.
Yeah. And that talks to a very strong ability called self-awareness, peripheral vision. So as a leader, your ability to have strong self-awareness, naturally, of course, part of the emotional intelligence cadre, but the ability to stand away from a situation, see what's going on around you, and then go back into that situation is an immensely powerful capability. And it's exactly that. And I'm sure your mood barometer would change accordingly in those different stances.
Absolutely. And I think there's a technical term, anyone who's an engineer, is the ability to recalibrate personally. Can I calibrate in this context to be effective? And so you need to have that. And I think that's a key thing for working effectively in situations and people having that sort of level of flexibility. And that gives you... So we've meandered around quite a few subjects. So I'm going to ask you before we finish this a quick... So we've talked about focus in leadership. We've talked about quite a lot of areas around that trust and the importance of trust. Focus, AI, wisdom, and all trust intelligence. And we've talked about understanding ourselves, empathy mapping, which is a lovely tool. I love the empathy map. So I'm going to ask you if you can say your three tips to help people focus in leadership better, starting in reverse order. So we'll start with Oak.
Yeah. So I think number one is reflection, you know, and it's got to be a habit. It's got to be something that you do on a constant basis so that it becomes a habit and you don't have to think about it, but you got to reflect. Number two, I think you have to build personal relationships with the people in your organization. You got to make an effort to do that. I got it. You got to keep the leader-led relationship, whatever. I mean, you got to keep that piece. But that doesn't mean that you can't learn about the people in your organization, because that's what builds the trust. And I think that the third thing I would say is that you have to develop the people in your organization so that you have time so they can run the things that you need them to run on a day-to-day basis with your guidance, with your vision, with the culture. And then you can be focused out, looking further out at the things that you as the leader should be focusing on.
Okay. Thank you very much. Jeff, the reason I stuck to three is because you would probably go on to 12. So I had to...
Well, it's funny you should mention that.
I can't think of three, but I don't need more.
I have got, I'd like to leave viewers with, and also more importantly, share to the group. First thing is, look, there are some very questionable decisions that are being made right now by government, by business. And actually, when I talk about the human relationship at home with man, wife, and sort of relationships generally. So I think we need to move away from transactional to more human relationship. I think the more the leader kind of walks the talk, so to speak, by sort of translating and internalizing values into real actions, I think then the higher the level of sort of the trust that we talked about and the respect will generate. And I think what we've got to start generating is followers. Now, on our website, we have a very interesting quote, which says, the power should be in the many and not the few. We stand by that because a big part of what we do at IBM is very much on that training piece that we talked about earlier. And more importantly, how we can see value created through ecosystems. So we know the power of that, right? So I wanted to share that with you. It's not so much the 3 points. And then what I did want to do is to talk a little bit about Newton. So Isaac Newton, funny enough. Now, we all know in 1687, Mr. Newton in a house in Lincolnshire with a pandemic created gravity, all right? So we know that great things can happen in the most adverse of circumstances. But he did actually say on the issue of trust, I do not know what I may appear to the world, but to myself, I seem to have been only like a boy playing on the seashore and diverting myself in now and then finding a smoother pebble or a prettier shell than ordinary, whilst the great ocean of truth lay all undiscovered before me. And that's the words of Sir Isaac Newton. So that's not necessarily my 3 points, but they are 3 things that I would like to leave the podcast with today.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
And I think to follow on from that, you know, this, and I think, Scott, you showed me one of your new books that you purchased, is to have a deep curiosity about life, you know, to slow down and to have that ability to unlearn and relearn is part of that. But curiosity is a great gift and we don't use it enough in life. Yeah. I think put people at the center of everything that you do. You know, in one's personal life, and I've read so many wonderful business cases about, you know, what's the success to longevity in life, and whether it's an Italian village and, you know, and the studies that Harvard did there. But it's a very simple philosophy of all those studies put together. Surround yourself with people that love you and care about you. And it's as simple as that. And so when we look at the work environment, whether it be our staff or whether it be the people we work with or our customers, put people at the center of everything that you do, care about them, have the aligned values and principles. And where you don't have aligned values and principles, then clearly you don't want to be together. And that's fine. You know, then those folks need to move on. But it's in this world of immense technological change and information download, is remain grounded in terms of that deep human sciences around the importance of human beings.
So very poetic finishes. Very hopeful and some very good points.
Your 3, by the way. You don't get off the hook.
You don't get off the hook too easy, Scott. Come on.
Well, I was actually going to say, well, you've covered them also. But partly is what you said, Douglas, is I think we need to be much more curious, but I think curious with care. Mm-hmm. We're too good at challenging people because I disagree with you, but we don't spend enough time being curious, not just about what's going on, but why. Mm-hmm. So, why does this person think this way? Why is this important to that person? Because I think if we can get an agreement on at least a level of where we're all trying to go, then the what becomes negotiable. I think we get too stuck in the what, and we don't really look at the because or the what we're trying to do. So I think that ability to move the conversation onto away from what to why, then the what becomes flexible, which gives them flexibility and us flexibility, which gives us capability to move. I think the other one is flexibility, which is about learning about yourself to become flexible so you can flex and adapt to the context in which you are in with people and the environment. And that, I think curiosity helps you do that because it helps you gather that information. And I just think it goes back to what you guys said. And right at the beginning, you said, especially in a leadership role, it is an honor and a privilege to lead people. I think if we took it from that perspective, rather than it's a positional thing that I'm in charge of people, but what I'm doing is a privilege, I think, again, changes the perception. So I think, yeah.
Yeah, well, you hit it on the nail. Are you a boss or a leader? This.
Well, yeah. I was trying to be poetic and failed miserably. So
you did.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. That's why you guys are writing books and not me. It's obviously it's evident. But now I do think, and I'll change that in some ways. And again, there's a guy who's been on previous podcasts, and he's in creativity and innovation space, and he's going to release a book soon about questions. And I think that's it. I think one of the key things is learn to ask yourself and other people profound questions.
Yeah.
Because I think that can shift perceptions. One of the best weapons to shift perception safely, I think, is a well-structured question. But be willing to ask yourself and others. So that's probably mine then.
Thanks, Scott.
You're welcome. Always.
Excellent, good. Scott. Thank you.
Gents,
this was fantastic, Scott.
Pardon, sorry?
This was fantastic. Good, thanks.
Well, I did very little. I just pressed record and you guys jumped on and talked. So thank you very much for enlightening. And as always, it's great listening to you guys have a chat. And when you come to the UK, if I am around, I will be honoured if we can hook up at some point and maybe up in Londinium.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Yes. Because we've got there's an outstanding date between Doug and Jeff and myself, which has been going on for about 4 months, probably a couple of years now, to try to get a time to hook up together. It's never quite worked. So
it's a bit longer than 2 years.
We had an excuse the first couple of years. It was called a pandemic. Money didn't.
That was your excuse, not mine. Yeah, Doug and I, we were busy.
I was being a good boy. I could say something quite politically insensitive, but I'm not going to do that moving around in the pandemic. And this goes back to trust and flexibility. I think it's what is it? The
purpose, by the way, purpose is in our mantra, right, Doug?
It's there. And I think the cool thing to remember is in it is that it's this mind the gap, the say do gap. Just mind your say do gap. So anyone in London would understand mind the gap. So make your say do gap as small as possible. What's the difference between what you say and what you do? Simple as that. All right, gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been an honor speaking to you as always. And I'd just like to say thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Scott.
No, absolute pleasure, Scott. And great to be with you, Doug, and Oak and Scott on this call. It's been thoroughly enjoyable.